it's time. It is that time. Time for Stiles and Watkins.
You can join the show by texting 916-339-1140. Find us on YouTube at Sactown Sports 1140.
It's time for Alan Stiles and Chris Watkins.
Yes, yes, yes. We are not halfway through the week, but almost halfway through this show. We'll be halfway through the week, or as we lead up to the drive, guys. But you got us, Stiles and Watkins. 10 to 2, as you always do, fastest growing show in Sacramento. And we will have our hands full today as we attempt to break down what happened as the Kings get absolutely throttled by the Dallas Mavericks. We spent a lot of time and we said, hey, this might be the last time we talk about the four seed if the Kings don't show up last night. We said that during yesterday's show, and that's what happened. So you will not be hearing about the four seed on this show anymore. At this point, just hoping to hold on and to get back, not even hold on, to get back to the sixth seed. The Kings lose 132-96. Okay, I tell people all the time, I'm an English guy, communications guy. Somebody asked me, how much did they lose by? I said, I don't have a calculator on me.
Nope.
That's how bad it is.
Yeah.
That's how bad it was. Got Simone behind the glass. Going to be doing a great job as always. And we will have the Kings Roundtable. So get your questions in for Frankie Cardicelli and Brendan Nunes. Because what the heck happened? Chris Watkins, how you doing?
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned you couldn't tell the score because I was watching the Cavs game the other day, and on their broadcast, they have this thing that shows up above the score that says the diff, and it's like minus something. And I was watching, and I was like, what is this? And then I finally figured out that it's literally just showing the score differential in the game.
Right.
And I was like, come on, like, do we really need
like
this? But last night, we really could have used the diff on the scoreboard because, you had to do some real math to try and figure out how much exactly the Kings were down by. And it's really disappointing that they lost in that fashion. And, you know, we heard I heard Whitey and Drapes talking yesterday on the way into the arena. And, you know, I know Whitey doesn't put these things lightly, and I'd love to ask him about it later today. But, you know, he said he'd be hard-pressed to find a regular season basketball game for this organization that was bigger than the one last night going into it.
Yeah, he said that.
The fact that they kind of laid an egg like they did, I mean, you know, they held on for that first half, and by the end of that third quarter, I mean, that thing was completely over. So we're going to talk about it a lot, but man, that's just not how you want to exit one of your, if not the biggest game that you've had this season. Not great to exit it losing by 36 at home.
Is it something that could be optioned, though, in that because of this, now Friday will be essentially the biggest regular season game?
I mean, in my opinion, I feel like you had to win both of these.
Okay.
So I think Friday's, it still is a big game, but it's not as big as what it could have been. Yeah, the tiebreaker's still big. It still is. They still. It's much better to have that tiebreaker than to not have it. But in terms of the significance of what it would mean to go 4-0 and then create that two games of separation, this game to bring it back even, and then overall, you still probably give Dallas like the 55-60% advantage over the Kings the rest of the way just because of their strength of schedule. It just kind of feels like it's a little bit dampened, but it still is a big game. I mean, the Kings absolutely, if anything, from just the Kings side of things, it's a really big game because you have to right that wrong on Tuesday. You can't have a performance again like you did the other night. You've got to come out and look like a completely different team. You got to look like the team that you've looked the 10 games previous to last night, because the last thing you want to do is let this thing start to snowball, and now this is, you know, feeling bad heading into a very brutal stretch of your schedule.
I'm terribly, terribly torn about this game because I will say this, and we have the De'Aaron sound, yes, as he was asked about being at the podium and the things he had to say. We have plenty of sound from last night, but I am torn because they all stood on business last night. The Kings did in the post game. They didn't make any excuses. We'll talk about the five games in seven nights. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about all that. And as they discussed the defense and the breakdowns that happened, and we did this on the show yesterday as the Mavericks were shooting 32% over their last 10 games. At the same time, I know we hate defense it, but were their rotations a little bit slow? The Kings, yes. Mm-hmm. But when the others, for the Mavericks to shoot 32%, this ain't the first game that these dudes had open shots. This is not the first game Derrick right. Jones Jr. had open. This is what every team wants to do, right? This isn't the first game Derrick Jones Jr. had open shots. It's not the first game PJ Washington had open shots. It's not the first game Tim Hardaway Jr., maybe to a lesser degree, Tim Hardaway Jr. had open shots. Dante Exum. I will say their defense wasn't great, but the Mavericks shot 56%. That's insane.
Yeah.
Okay, Kyrie Irving, 4-for-9 from three. All right, you have to live with it. Luka, 4-for-8 from three. But this is what's crazy. How much of this is bad defense or just, I hate to say bad luck, but PJ Washington, 4-for-6 from three. Derrick Jones Jr., 2-for-4 from three. Morris, who just waltzed into the game, 1-for-1. Tim Hardaway Jr., 4-for-6. Dante Exum, 2-for-3. Hardy, 1-for-2.
Yeah.
There is a part of this, and I don't want to let them off the hook.
No, but say
maybe you still lose.
No, you're right, though.
And but it doesn't look like this.
Exactly. Dallas shot their highest percentage, their most efficient three-point shooting performance of the season by far. Their previous high was 54% earlier this year against Atlanta. They shot 51% one other time against San Antonio. And they hit their second most threes that they've hit in a game all year. They shot the lights out. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about it before. I mean, sometimes, you know, Kings get tons of open looks too. Yesterday, a little bit. HB definitely missed some open ones. Keegan definitely missed some open ones yesterday. But we've talked about it. Like, it's one thing to get open looks. It's a whole nother thing to actually hit those open looks. Mm-hmm. And yesterday, everything was clicking for Dallas. And, you know, more power to them. Absolutely. Again, both teams knew how big of a game yesterday was.
Yeah.
Dallas showed up with their A-plus game. Kings did not. So you gotta take your hat off, give Dallas a round of applause for how they stepped up in that moment, really, and the Kings absolutely did not. But you're right, like Dallas isn't going to shoot 56% on Friday. I can almost guarantee that. I think the Kings did get a bit unlucky, but absolutely, they still put themselves in that situation too. Mike Brown, even in the pregame, yet again reiterated, I have been talking the basic fundamentals with this defense here. They didn't do it last night. Their closeouts weren't as sharp. And you know, it's fine. I said it on the post game yesterday. They played 10 games in a row of the best basketball we have seen them play all year long on the defensive side. Last night was a slip up. Those things happen. Again, for a team that hadn't played consistently anything. They hadn't played consistent offense, consistent defense. They hadn't looked a consistent way all year long. The most consistent they looked were these last 10 games on defense. It's okay for them to have one slip up as long as they return to it again on Friday.
Right.
It's just incredibly unfortunate that slip up happened again in probably your most important game
of the
season.
Worst time.
The worst possible time.
They have had a pattern, right? And I'm sure a lot of people have seen it where they win two games, where they win two games and they lose, or they lose a game and then they win two.
Yep.
Then they lose a game and then they win two. I don't. The good thing is everyone says, I feel good about Friday. Okay, that's fine.
I feel better about Friday.
But with that pattern, I don't know if you get the six. I still don't know if that's good enough to get the six seed.
No, I don't think
now,
so.
Now, because of when you got this loss. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, okay, win or loss, win. Okay, so they will win two games after this. They beat the Mavericks. They beat whoever they have after the Mavericks. And then they lose one. Not to say that the Mavericks are going to go undefeated here, but I next game is the most important.
Yeah,
but it does kind of, again, bring you back to reality. And as the TNT crew actually gave love to the Kings, I almost feel like it's just the kiss of death.
Yeah.
Everybody wants the Kings to be talked about nationally, but whenever they do, they do not get it done. I'm looking here, Chris. This is the first game that the Kings played against the Mavericks because Kyrie and a couple other guys didn't play in that first game. And you had Grant Williams. They shot 35% from three, and the Kings beat them 129
to 113. Here is what's interesting compared to the last game. So last night you had Luka 4-for-8 from three, Kyrie 4-for-9 for three, right? That game, that first game, Kyrie was 2-for-6, Luka was 3-for-7. So essentially the same thing as far as their three-point shooting, but the other guys in that game, Grant Williams 1-for-4, Derrick Jones Jr. 1-for-2, Morris 0-for-2, Tim Hardaway Jr. 2-for-4, Prosper 0-for-1, Josh Green, who didn't even play, 2-for-5. Dante Exum, 0-for-1. They shot 35%. So I hate to and we know the Kings weren't playing better defense at that point in time. So how much of that is the Kings getting unlucky? How much of that is the Kings not showing up?
Yeah.
It's a little bit of both. When we return, we got Frank Facts to break it all down. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. Oh, Simone. Simone was in the building last night.
Yep.
And she just looked. She found us. She found us as it was playing.
Oh,
and she
yes.
just gave us a look. And Jason Ross shot us a text. Shout out to Julian when this whole thing started and really bringing it to the forefront. And look, if anybody from King's PR was listening during that crossover, let me just say that Dave played me. But I will say, if we can do this constructively, our thoughts, or I'll say my thoughts, and Chris can chime in.
I would say our.
It was played with no lyrics.
Yep.
Right? We wanted it to be We Want the Monk, similar to the Sabonis chant.
Yep.
It was played with no lyrics. It was played very, very low volume, I think because it was they were down 20.
Yes.
Right? So, is it the premiere that we were hoping for? No, but we did get
it. Right.
We did get it. Now, moving forward on Friday. Now, Malik has to do his part. And we talk about Malik Monk. I didn't create this. I won't say who will. But it was Malik Funk last night. Because he hasn't been able to kind of get going really any from three-point land. Mm-hmm. He's turning the ball over. So Malik has to do his part.
Yes.
We've been spoiled with how Malik has played all season.
Yeah.
And he's been hot all season. So that happens in the first quarter. Everybody's into it.
Yep.
The lyrics are playing. Oh, this is a new thing that we're doing. Coming in, down 20. What was that, the third quarter?
I think it was the third.
And I think we were all just, wait, did they just play that?
Did they just
that?
Do the thing?
Yeah. And then they did it again. And you could tell it was a bit half-hearted. And I get it, right? It's like as baseball's about to start, how a lot of these teams have home run celebrations.
Yeah.
Doing the celebration down 10-1, it's kind of corny.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're not going to do it with the same life.
Right.
By the way, it wasn't just a Malik. That was the, and I know I saw Carmichael Dave tweet about this. That was the saddest Keegan Murray.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted to
do it.
Yeah. Nobody wanted to do it.
Keegan Murray. He's just like, I'm gonna do it this time.
Nobody wanted to do it. So that's all I'll say about the Malik Monk. We got it out there. Sack chat.
It's now officially grassroots.
This is how you build
it
up. And we're just providing feedback right now.
We're just providing feedback. Yes. If we want this to be what we had hoped for.
Yeah.
Everybody's got to do their part.
Yep.
Malik has to do their part.
Get the word out there,
you guys.
The fans
got to do their part. Everybody's got to do their part to make this thing really take off, because I don't think anybody knew what was supposed to be done there.
Yeah. No, I think they have to your point, like Malik needs to do something early in the game too so that it's established, and then later in the game when he does something, it's like you're almost waiting for it to happen, because we actually got it on a great moment.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, it was off the lob, right?
It was off the lob.
Yeah.
It was off the lob.
Like, it was an exciting enough play.
Behind the head dunk, I believe. And it just, at that point, it was kind of cooked.
How about that Keegan steal, and then like he just kind of threw it in the air for Malik to get it too?
Right.
That was a nice little play from Malik. But
I think they played it for that too.
Did it really? I know they, because they played it twice. I couldn't remember.
Well, it wasn't on a three.
Definitely.
I can tell you that much. So, hey, we got to keep pushing. We got to keep moving.
Right.
And Malik will get out of his funk. But first, we got Frank Facts.
That's right. And, of course, as we plug every time, you can read Frank Cardicelli. You can read his post-game articles, his post-game recaps every single game after the Kings complete their complete their wins, hopefully. But they're after losses as well. And sometimes, you know, you need to read articles like Frankie's just to kind of make you feel better or at least try and get a better understanding of what happened. And that's exactly what this first number is detailing. Frankie puts in his article, while the Kings might have been playing its fifth game in 7 nights, still not quite an excuse for the effort we saw last night, but still 5 games in 7 nights, Alan. It's not something we talked about. I didn't hear a lot of people really mention it, but once we stepped into the arena, I was telling you, G-Man was really big on this. You know, as we all tend to do when we get into the game, just ask everyone, hey, how you feeling about tonight? How you feeling about tonight? G-Man's answer was, well, it is 5 games in 7 nights, and I'm not really hearing a lot of people talk about that. And then when you see how that result played out, both teams were on back-to-backs, so that's not really a valid excuse. But when you hear that the Kings had played that many games in that short of a time frame, that's really tough. And, you know, that you could argue that's a bit of an excuse, but still, 5 and 7 nights is a ton of games and a lot of wear for you to be playing at such a high level. Last night, Dallas entered play having shot 30% from deep over their past 6 games. And again, Dallas last night absolutely shoots the lights out. They shoot 22 of 39 for 56%. So definitely, Alan, as I was reading numbers yesterday on Dallas's last 3 games and last 10 games, you were like, I don't want to hear any of that.
I didn't.
Because that makes me feel like they are due. And that's exactly what happened. Dallas was due yesterday. And, man, they just shot through the ceiling on that one. That was absolutely ridiculous. Luka, who gave the Kings fits, scored 26 points in the first half. However, the MVP candidate scored just 2 the remainder of the game. Sounds good, right? Sounds like the Kings locked up. Well, here's the problem. Kyrie Irving took over in that second half. Irving had 18 points and put the nail in the coffin for Sacramento, who allowed 120 points for the first time in their last 10 games. The Kings' 36-point loss last night was tied for their most lopsided defeat of the season. The one previous, well, that was the November 20th game against the New Orleans Pelicans, and it happened last night in front of a national TV audience on TNT, which, from being in the arena, you know, it really hasn't quite set in for me that that happened in front of the entire nation, that everybody was probably hyped leading into that game, seeing, oh my gosh, both these teams tied in the standings. This is going to be a crazy game in Sacramento. The atmosphere is going to be nuts. And, you know, again, it was a good first half, but really by the mid-third quarter, if I'm a casual observer, if I don't care about either of those teams, I'm cutting that game off real quick.
What was the score at halftime?
I believe it was 51-56. I can double check that.
Because it felt worse.
It was 53-58.
It felt much worse than that.
It did. No, it felt really bad. I had in my notes last night, I was like, Kings have no answer for Luka. Kings not getting any stops, but they're holding on. Mm-hmm. And then by the mid-third quarter, I was like, this game is over. Kings continue to not get stops and go cold. Another rough night from Malik Monk. Kings holding on by a thread. And then that thread got snapped real quick. Two more for you, Frankie Facts. For the first time since January 7th, no member of the Kings offense finished with 20 points. De'Aaron was last night's leading scorer with 19. This is only the 6th time that that has happened all season. And you're right out there for guessing. The Sacramento Kings are 0-6 this season when they have not a single player finish above 20 points in a game. And here's the last number. I think you actually prompted Frank to look this one up.
Yes, this is a collab.
Yeah,
collab.
This is a Frankie X Styles collab here. The Kings are 7-24 when trailing at the half.
It's not a good collab.
Not a great
one. Not a good result from the collab. That's actually pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's nuts.
It feels like
they have a ridiculous record when they win, when they're winning after 3 quarters.
Right, when they're winning after 3 quarters, it completely flips.
I think they're like 34-5 or something.
Yeah, they are 38-5 when leading going into the fourth.
Wow.
The problem is that third quarter, it feels like they've been terrible in third quarters all season long. And it feels like what we've done with Kyle Shanahan and trailing in the fourth quarter, things like that.
Oh, yeah.
That's actually pretty bad. I mean, 7-24 when trailing at the half means that if you don't have it, you don't have it.
And you're not going to get it.
And you're not going to get it.
It also, you know, for all those get Brown out of town people, that's a number I would use to show, hey, maybe they're not making adjustments at halftime here. Maybe they are, I won't say a one-trick pony, but maybe it is just kind of, we are what we are, and if you can figure it out, then you probably figured it out. And if you can't figure it out, then, you know, that's then you're probably not going to figure us out. So it is a pretty strange number because, again, usually, especially, you know, those Warrior teams back in the day, they used to pride themselves on those third quarters. The third quarter was really what started those games. It was if you could survive the third, you were going to be in pretty good have a pretty good chance. That number right there is showing, if it, like you said, I mean, if the Kings haven't figured it out by halftime, they're probably not going to figure it out. 7-24 is crazy.
Coming up next, we will hear from the team post-game. We got Mike Brown sound. We got De'Aaron Fox sound. Yes, we do. And we will discuss Luka Doncic and how he was out of his mind last night. Stiles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. That defense that we talked so much about just didn't seem to have it last night. Ellis Island was not as locked down. You were able to swim off. You were able to do a lot of different things last night. It's Kyrie Irving. And I think last night was a reminder, and I am not a Kyrie Irving fan for a multitude of reasons, but last night was a reminder that there are levels to this. And when you see a guy like Keon Ellis, who has locked up a Dame Lillard, and he did his best against a Jalen Brunson, a lot of screen actions, things like that, but he's locked up some of these guys. Then you get Kyrie in town, and you see Keon get put on skates like this was Roll Bounce 2 multiple times. I hadn't seen Kyrie play live in a while, and it was just a reminder, wow, this dude is crazy.
Oh,
crazy.
Yeah. No, for sure. I mean, I want to push back a little bit there because Keon, like, let's not forget, he's still really young in his career.
But that's all I'm saying, though. I'm just saying there's levels. We're saying he's a lockdown guy, and Kyrie comes to town, and, oh, Keon's still there's still room to get there.
For sure.
There's nobody in the league that can lock down Kyrie.
Yeah.
But we talked about it being a matchup we were excited to see.
For sure.
And it just put things in perspective.
I mean, that's exactly what I expected out of Keon, though. Like, I didn't expect Keon to have, like, what he had against Dame and all those things. Like, Kyrie is a special, special player. I think that, if anything, like, I thought it was great that Kyrie gave Keon that respect. I thought there was a couple moments where Kyrie sized him up and was like, whoa, this dude is not biting on things that normally people bite on. And I think Kyrie really did, in a weird way. Like, I think Kyrie giving him buckets was his biggest sign of respect. Like, I've seen Kyrie play a couple different times, and, you know, you'll get varying degrees of his, you know, his ball handling and him having special moves. Felt like yesterday he was really like, I'm going to throw everything at this
kid. Welcome to the league type deal.
I don't think it was welcome to the league. I think it was, wow, this dude legitimately is a test for me, and I'm going to give him a real legitimate look. I'm not just going to give him, you know, the okie doke that I give normal people. Like, I'm going to give him some real advanced jab steps and see how he reacts to it. For the most part, I thought Keon did fine, but I mean, now he absolutely got cooked a couple times. But
they ran some screens at him too.
To me, that game was so big for Keon because, much like the Kings' performance in general, I just don't think that's going to happen again. Like, I think that's a big game for Keon because he sees, you know, right in front of him, okay, this is what that top level you're talking about, the levels to this, Kyrie is it. And, like, you know, he's I could see Keon kind of picking up some things along the way, seeing how Kyrie
was
moving.
Ended up in a jump ball.
That's right. Yeah, he did. He stripped Kyrie, which I think was the moment where Kyrie was like, oh, this guy's different. You kind of saw him jawing back and forth before they did that jump ball. I think Kyrie was kind of telling him, like, I assume he was trash talking, but in a weird way, saying, you know, showing him respect in that manner too. I actually didn't mind it. I think Keon, and I'm just hoping that Friday looks a lot better, but I think that they all learned a great deal yesterday, and I think Keon is definitely the biggest example of that.
And it's not just about Keon. You know, it's tough to contain Kyrie on the defensive end. But Keon, the other thing is, not only am I trying to lock down Kyrie, which he did the best that he could, He had 10 points, and he premiered some different shots we hadn't seen him make before, right? He had a couple middies, and he had a nice layup as well, and he still had the three ball going. So all in all, for the Keon experience, we can take that, right? The problem is just the end result. Luka was the issue. We haven't even got to Luka, and there's plenty to get to with Chris's boy, Luka Doncic. Let's get to TC on the Folsom Lake Honda Hotline. All guests and callers, join us from the Folsom Lake Honda Hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop, 916-339-1140, if you want to be a part of the conversation. What's up, TC? Rough one last night. What you got for us?
Man, that was a rough one. Alan and Chris, what's up, though?
What's good, man?
Trying to stay up.
Hey, check it out, though, man. You know what? It was a rough one, man, but the band would be all right. I'm with you, Chris. Hey, Alan, that's what I've been talking about with Domas. I heard you last night, Chris, what you was talking about with the 1,000 pump fakes. Everybody thought I was crazy when I was saying that. Sabonis, put the ball up, bro.
Yeah.
I don't care about all these double-doubles you're getting. That's fine and dandy, bro, but you have to shoot the ball. You have to dominate the ball. When the shot's not falling, give me the ball in the post. That's what this team has to figure out, bro. We need Domas to be more dominant down the stretch, whether it's called for or not. De'Aaron, watch your shots. Watch your shots, bro. Shooting three-pointers when we don't need them.
Yeah.
Also, find a hot hand. So when Keon has it going, right, and when Keon and Keegan has it going, feed them. This has nothing to do with that. They have to find their own shots. No, the team should find them, bro. We should know. Mike, call a timeout. Hey, y'all, look, check it out. So-and-so has a hot hand. Find him. Draw plays up for him. Get him the ball. Get these guys the ball. I don't care about if this guy doesn't have it. We still have to give it to Fox and Domas and all that. No, bro. Find a hot hand, big dog. That's what we need to do as a team. I promise you we'll be better off.
Thanks for the call, TC. But I will say this, Chris, and you've been in the pregame and some of the postgame pressers. When you're not doing your postgame on YouTube, be sure to holler at Chris and check him out for his YouTube postgames at SacktownSports.com and also on the YouTube channel, of course. They're not going to do that, though. Mike Brown, it's all about the flow offense. Mm-hmm. They ask about Keegan. Everybody in the media asks about when Keegan gets hot or whatever. Hey, yeah, he puts it on the team and he puts it on the players to be more assertive.
Yeah.
He is not going to sit, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe things will change in the playoffs. But from what I've seen and what I've heard, he is not going to sit in there. When HB has a hot night, we all sit in there, the media, we sit in there. What's the first question? Hey, Mike, looked like Harrison Barnes got going there. Was there a concerted effort after the last couple games as he was pretty quiet? No.
Game just kind of found him today.
HB's going to get shots, and he's going to hit him. It's the same thing every single time. Yeah. That's just what it's been.
And to build on that, my biggest gripe, let me see how many minutes we have left in the segment, because I truly, Alan, I was beside myself yesterday, and this is the most that I feel like I'm on the record here saying I for the most part, do not question this coaching staff. Mm-hmm. I think they do a great job. Alan, I cannot find a logical reason why the Sacramento Kings did not just attack Luka Doncic on the defensive end yesterday. Not only is it something that quite literally every NBA team does, if you look at the defensive matchup against Luka for – 90% of his games, he's getting attacked at least 15 to 20 times a game. Mm-hmm. Last night, the Kings were 4 of 10 when going against Luka Doncic. Luka defended, held his opponents to 40% from the field, which is pretty good for Luka, actually. That's like he was on the injury report for an Achilles injury. Mm-hmm. We saw him limping in the first quarter. He played 41 minutes the night before, and he's already a terrible defender. I don't get it. I don't understand how you don't just look at that matchup and say, this guy cannot stop us. Offensively, we know he's going to be a problem. If anything, it should already be the game plan. We want this guy running as much as possible on the defensive end because we know on offense, he's going to walk it down. He's going to back people up. He's going to try and slow the game down. You want him to be as tired as possible and actually force him to play defense just like you would James Harden or Trae Young or someone like that. I don't understand why last night they don't just go at Luka every single time. And I'll answer my own question. It's because Keegan was being guarded by him. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Dallas said, Who's the guy on this floor that we just really don't think is going to attack this mismatch? It's Keegan Murray, who we've talked about here this past couple weeks. He just doesn't look across the floor and see, I could take this mismatch. Oh, this is the best option for the team right now is for me to go at this guy. I could not wrap my mind around how you don't attack quite literally one of the worst defenders in the NBA. Made no sense.
Well, they were hiding him too. They were hiding him on the baseline.
But you can't hide him if you force the... To what you were just saying about them forcing those mismatches, you have to attack that. This is playoff basketball. This is a two-game series where you're playing for your playoff life, your play-in spot. You've got to do everything you can to win those games. Doesn't matter game plans, like long-term. You just are trying to win that night. To me, the best course of action to win on a single night against Dallas, attack Luka on defense.
They were hiding him on the baseline, some of it. And when we return, we will talk about who else was not able to take advantage of Luka's lackluster defense. We'll also hear from Mike Brown and De'Aaron Fox. Doug, we see you on the line. We'll get to you if you want to be a part of the conversation. 916-339-1140. Stiles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. From the 916... I can see credence and valid points like 5 games in 7 nights and the Mavs shooting well above their average and being hot. But this was a 36-point thumping at home in a very meaningful game. Hard for me to chalk it up personally.
Just real quick on that, though. Like, if you just say, and this is a bit extreme because you are taking a good portion of their points away, but if you just look at it as Dallas had 11 more three-pointers made than the Kings, that's 33 points right there. So maybe if Dallas hits 15 threes instead of 22, maybe if they hit 13, just a more regular number that you'll see, the game might not look so bad. And so, like, you know, again, I think that is that's a bit wishful thinking. Again, you can't really just take away 11 threes from a team and say, yeah, if you didn't hit those 11 threes, then you don't win the game. That's a bit much, but... You know, if you're just looking to try and make yourself feel a little bit better after last night, again, Dallas probably is never going to shoot that well again. And, you know, the loss definitely looked worse than what it probably was because Dallas just shot the absolute lights out.
Yeah, and there was just no breathing room. Every time the Kings tried to get a run, you cannot go on a run if the other team doesn't miss. That's exactly what happened.
Right.
There was one three in particular. I believe it was in the third quarter when things started to get out of hand. And you know what Kyrie's going to do. You know what Luka's going to do. But for me, there was a kick out to Derrick Jones Jr. in the corner. And you could just hear the air get let out of the building when he hit that three. Because at that point, it was, all right, man, this is what we're doing. Everybody is just, there's just nobody is going to miss today. That's how it felt. It felt like nobody was going to miss for the Mavs. And for the most part, they didn't. They just didn't. And he literally averages 8.8 points. He had 8 points last night, Derrick Jones Jr. did. And it was just enough. He's been shooting 30% from three-point range. He was 2 for 4 last night. And I get it. Small sample size. He's 35% from three on the season. And every single time the Kings tried to get on a run, there was just no breathing room.
No.
There was just no breathing room. And the one thing I will say, Chris, as you were kind of coming down Keegan's road with the Luka stuff, what I saw a lot of Luka just rover back and forth at the bottom of the baseline. And who I saw Luka on a decent bit, I know they were setting screens, was Keon and HB. And very similar to how LeBron was hiding on HB,
right.
and HB was hitting that night. HB, and he only took 4 threes. HB was cold.
Yeah.
So they did a good job. And it was almost a hybrid zone. And they would, every time Luka got screened, he would just hand the person off. And we'll get to Derek Lively. He shut down the paint.
Mm-hmm.
There were no spray threes. So they did a really good job, the Mavs did, in hiding Luka. They didn't put him, and maybe some, I don't know how much is on the Kings versus a good game plan by the Mavs. I will say this, and you have the numbers, Luka, they aren't good at hiding Luka,
But for some odd reason, they were good at hiding him last night. Maybe there was an added emphasis because they knew he wasn't healthy. But I was watching, and we're all saying the same thing, but there weren't a lot of opportunities that I saw where it was a screen out, Luke is by himself, Keegan, get busy. Luka did a great job of just handing him off, and they did not have – they weren't hitting shots.
Yeah.
And they did not have the personnel, I guess, to make them pay the same way the Mavs were making the Kings pay.
Yeah, I think that's more – and I was talking to Brendan about it last night. Like, when the Kings' offense isn't moving – or is it, I guess isn't moving as part of it, but, like, isn't clicking on all cylinders, that's when the dribble handoff stuff – looks really simple. It's just like it's too repetitive.
Yeah.
And that's where it's like you don't have a counter. You don't have a, hey, the DHO stuff isn't working.
We're the split
Maybe
action.
We just go to just more pick and roll in general. Like, because that's how you, like, yeah, it's going to be tough to try and exploit a matchup when you're in that equal opportunity flow offense. You can't really, unless you're going to get Luka into the handoff and then run a pick and roll off of the handoff.
Get him on De'Aaron, I guess.
Like, you have to switch up your mindset. You got to switch up the game plan. You've got to run just more pick and rolls in general. We saw them do it really early, like in the middle of the season. They just went to pick and roll. I think it was against Minnesota in the middle of the year where they just ran pick and roll after pick and roll after pick and roll until they stopped it, and they just never did. That's exactly what I would have done with Luka. Just get him in as many actions as possible. And I looked more into the numbers. In January, Luka averaged 17.7 defensive field goal attempts per game. In February, 17.4 field goal attempts per game. It's down a bit in the month of March. Maybe Luka's playing better defense. It's down to 14.1 per game in the month of March. But for the entire season, it's at 15.6. So again, the fact that the Kings have five less field goal attempts against Luka, pretty much 33% less attempts than what teams normally have against him. Mm-hmm. I just don't see how that happens. Like, I think that that's, especially again, in a playoff type game, in a gotta have it kind of environment, the fact that you don't just go at the guy who is their biggest weak point on defense just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, and that's what TC was saying, our caller from earlier. And that is not what we have been seeing. And that goes to, if this is, and Mike Brown said, hey, it's not a playoff game, it's a little bit different. They have today off, which is another reason to, you can tell that it's not a playoff game. But ultimately, that is the question. Huge showdown on Friday.
Huge.
What adjustments will you make? 916-339-1140. Let's go to Doug, who's been hanging on. Alan, we see you as well. What's up, Doug? What you got for us?
Gentlemen, good morning. First, I like to start you guys talking about how guys go bias and that kind of, and it happens in every team throughout the league that, you know, some teams just are able to go in and drive the ball and get to the cup easy and stuff, and that's fine. But foot speed is something that is very valuable on that defensive end. And another thing that we do, we are in an upright position to be able to contest a three, but we're not in a down position to be able to go in and stay in front of our, the offense better. So you're picking your poison from the beginning. Oh, am I going to defend the three on my closeout, or I'm going to let you kind of go by me? Then we come over and help. Then they kick to the corner or wherever it is, and then they hit a three.
Exactly.
So that's kind of where we are there. But I'm going to start at the very top, though. By Monty not making any moves, I'm going to say first that the teams have exceeded my expectation, but you've got to get guys who can then compete at the level of the rest of the league. Dallas went in. Who'd they go get? Gabbert, whatever his name is, and P.J. Washington. Those are two very good players. We're not spending the money to go get the guys to get us to be more competitive. That's all I have. Have a great show. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for the call, Doug. Yeah, that's always tough because, look, we love Doug, one of our good callers.
Incredible.
But we didn't talk about this the last couple weeks. Well, maybe not the last couple weeks. The last couple games as the Kings were rounding into form. It was all about Keon Ellis and, wow, look at what the G League is bringing and look at what they're able to do. So it's not that I disagree with Doug. There's just nothing that we can do with that right now.
You're talking about the closeout stuff? Or
no, I'm talking about the Monty McNair not making a
right.
move stuff.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, there's not much we can do about that now. I agree with that. Yeah, you're right.
Like, it's not that we disagree.
Yeah, it's just we're past that point now. Yeah. I mean, it is it's you're right. It is a valid point that, you know, this is probably exactly what you should have addressed at the deadline is getting, you know, how many times we talk about the Royce O'Neals, mm-hmm. the Dorian Finney-Smiths, all those defensive-minded wings. That's exactly the kind of guy you would have thrown on Luka last night. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of guy that you just don't have. The Pelicans games, the Clippers games, we're going to probably run into that same issue over and over again. Probably against the Celtics as well. We're probably going to run into that issue again. So you're right. You're not wrong, Doug, at all. But there's nothing we can do about it now. We've got the personnel we've got. And these are the guys that we're going to go to war with. And, yeah. and that's what Mike Brown said, too. He said, you know, we didn't make any moves at the deadline, so I had to look at this roster and say, we've got to find it from within. And if we're not going to find it from within, then we're just going to get smoked all year. And I think you put it this way yesterday, that's how Keon Ellis emerges. And, you know, it's been a good patchwork, but I think here recently, really since the Washington game when we first asked, what is Keon's range, I think we're just finding Keon Ellis cannot guard 1 through 5s and cannot guard all different shapes and sizes. No pun intended with Luka. It's the learning curve. He's the best they've got, but they don't have much else.
Yeah, they do not have somebody for those wings, and we knew that, and we thought maybe Keon would be enough. Not enough at the moment. Alan, we see you on the line. We will get to you right after the break when we return. Continuing the conversation of what went wrong last night, we hear from Mike Brown and his thoughts also from De'Aaron Fox. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.